Welcome to the second part of our in-depth interview with Bethany Hall and David Debney of the Aerospace Technology Institute, during which they continue to guide our flight through the highly topical issue of achieving zero emissions from aircraft. In this part, we get them to tell us about electric air taxis, sustainable aviation fuels, Rolls-Royce's record-breaking electric aircraft, the Spirit of Innovation, the importance of hydrogen as a power source, and the use of fuel cells. The ATI will be launching a number of reports on their work over the next few months, and we can already see that hydrogen will be a major new fuel alternative for aircraft, especially the long-range ones. So let's get started on another intriguing trip into the future. Coming at it from an economic and probably a nationalist point of view, how well positioned is the UK to lead and make money out of this?
So interesting that you asked that question, because I think very soon our UK capability report is going to be published. I think within the next couple of weeks, fingers crossed. So maybe when this podcast comes out, it will already be out there. But the team have done like a very robust analysis of where the UK currently has strengths, where we can play to win in all of the different technologies that FlyZero has looked at. So fuel cells, aerodynamic structures, electrical systems, gas turbines, etc. I think in summary, the UK does have a strong footing in aerospace, and there's definitely lots of potential to act, and that's essentially what FlyZero is trying to do, is to advise where it is the best places for us to act in order to play a big part in combating aerospace emissions and to support the UK economy.
That's right. So, I mean, aerospace is a very sought after industry by governments because it creates lots of high value jobs. And the UK is very strong in aerospace today. I think we're third in the world now, depending on which metrics you use.
Wow.
We have technical skills and manufacturing capability in many elements of an aircraft, which do support a lot of jobs. And when we've been through this evolutionary period that we've been in since the gas turbine was invented, the UK has maintained its strong position. But if there is a step change or a disruptive change in the technology that's used for those aircraft, then it opens up the possibility for new entrants. I'm a big Formula One fan, and that you may be aware that this year there's a huge shift in the regulations for the design of the cars. And every time, what tends to happen in Formula One is when you have stability of the regulations, you know, the cars get closer and closer together. And when there's a big shift, there's always the chance that one team steals an advantage over the others because they interpret the regulations in a particular way, or they find something that no one else has thought of. And that analogy is the same for the UK's aerospace industry, looking at things like hydrogen. We're in a very strong position because of our current knowledge. But if we become complacent, there's a risk that someone else could come in and steal a march with these new technologies. And again, that's why we have projects like FlyZero to try and make sure that the UK is being proactive and is thinking about where the right areas of research should be to continue the UK's position at the forefront of the global aerospace industry.
Yeah, it certainly sounds exciting. Could I spring one on you and ask you or Bethany really about the urban transport aspects of this in terms of aviation? People have been excited by the thought of electrically powered air taxis zipping around the place, some of them autonomous and all that sort of thing. Is that actually going to happen? And would battery and electric power be suitable for it? I know Airbus has got a plan, but what is FlyZero doing?
So FlyZero is not actually looking at that market segment at all.
Ah, right. Okay.
But that is something that the ATI has looked at in the past.
Yeah.
The main reason that the FlyZero project isn't looking at that segment is because, firstly, it's relatively well funded already.
Yeah.
If you look around the world, there are probably five or so companies that have gone public, have raised hundreds of millions of pounds in investment, one of which is a UK company called Vertical Aerospace. They're based in Bristol. And so I think that's, again, another area of UK success. You know, we have a world-leading company in that area already. That size of aircraft absolutely is where you'd be looking at batteries. For longer ranges, you may wish to look at hybrids or other things, but all the leading companies are already pursuing batteries as their primary solution for their aircraft. So I would call them, in industry speak, I would call them eVTOLs. So that's electrical vertical takeoff and landing. So do I think it will happen? Yes, I think it will. I think it will be a great opportunity to replace or substitute for ground transport where links are very challenging. My personal view is that within a city, I'm not sure that it will be as big as some people are suggesting it globally. You know, realistically, if you're only flying a kilometer or so across a city, there are many options. If you're in a big city like London already, there are many public transport options that already exist.
Yeah.
If I was to pick a use case for the UK where I think it might start, I would say something like London Heathrow to Canary Wharf, where you've got a large number of people currently having to either take the tube or a taxi that, relatively speaking, have a lot of money, and to them, time is valuable.
Yeah.
So something like that, if you had a shuttle service between those two locations, I could see that being commercially viable. Obviously, you know, Vertical Aerospace have got their own commercial strategy department that no doubt will be working very hard on this.
Yeah.
In summary, yes, I think it will happen. I think there are different ways that it may manifest itself, which are not necessarily what the likes of Uber and others have been saying. But watch this space. That's why it's one of the reasons it's exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just to add a personal perspective for myself. So I'm seconded to FlyZero from Rolls-Royce, where I was previously working in what's now the Rolls-Royce electrical business, which when I started as an intern in 2015 was just a research group. And it's now, like, to see the developments that have happened in that space, and Rolls-Royce Electrical now has Rob Watson, who was the director of Rolls-Royce Electrical, is now on the executive team at Rolls-Royce because the electrical business is booming, and we've got a very good footprint in electrical technologies, of which one of our market segments is urban air mobility, and which we are providing technology for the demonstrator for Vertical Aerospace. So, yeah, I'd say that is another very, very exciting segment, as exciting as FlyZero, I would say, and the zero carbon commercial aircraft that we're looking at.
Yeah, Rolls-Royce have been in the news recently with the high speed record aircraft, electrically powered. That's really a demonstrator, presumably, is it?
Yeah. So I was actually lucky enough to spend some time on my graduate scheme working on that project, which was, cool. It was a proper pinch me moment because, I decided to be an engineer when I watched a lecture about the Bloodhound supersonic car, and I thought it's so cool to do something that's breaking a world record. And then I actually got to work on the Spirit of Innovation. That was absolutely, it was about showing what's possible, but to like spark developments in the supply chain for this electrical technology. So one of Rolls-Royce partners, Electrofly, is a startup who were developing incredible capability in batteries for aircraft, and a lot of them are coming from the Formula E industry and bringing skills and expertise from the quick turnaround of technology in Formula E and bringing it to aerospace. So yeah, it's an exciting demonstrator that wasn't just about showing off something fancy, but about really trying to get technology development off the ground.
But especially in battery technology, presumably.
Yes, yeah, and the electrical system around it, so the power electronics, and yeah, we used Yasa motors for that one.
Yeah, so the when you talk about electric aviation at the moment, and again, just to sum up, we're talking about fairly small aircraft. Some of them will be eVTOLs, as Dave was just talking about. And what about regional commuter aircraft? Will they be powered by electric anytime soon?
What you find when you look at the sums with electric propulsion is you tend to be limited on range, so how far you're trying to fly.
Yeah.
I think most projections in the medium term, by which I mean out to sort of 2035, 2040, would say that with an electric aircraft, you could probably go a few hundred miles, 300, 400, 500 miles, depending on where the technology gets to, and no further. So that kind of puts it into context. 300 miles is roughly the distance from London to Paris-ish, yeah. You know, to kind of put that into context. So yes, it is a distinct possibility that smaller regional aircraft or sub-regional commuter aircraft, as they're sometimes called, could be electric. And actually, I would go so far as to say electrical is probably the ideal solution to replace kerosene, okay. As we've talked about. It's just the challenge of getting the batteries to be good enough. The energy efficiency, the fact that it is genuinely zero emissions in flight, you know, all these kind of things are huge positives. But at the moment, the batteries are just not good enough to power, you know, the sort of aircraft you'd fly on your holiday on.
No. Is there anything in sight for battery development that would give us cause for some sort of excitement and optimism as far as battery power is concerned for aircraft?
Well, I think with battery development, it's all about the cell technology. So think about your AA battery. And so that's the cylindrical cell, but there's also pouch cells. And at the moment, the technology advancements in battery cells is driven by Formula E. And so, it's hard. I would say it's hard to predict when we're going to get the advancements we need, but there's definitely significant investment and R&D going into it at the moment. But I wouldn't be able to comment on when it will be good enough for longer ranges in aerospace.
So are they looking at new materials, new chemicals than lithium, or?
They're looking at all sorts of things. There are various technologies. I think you asked about the question of, are there things on the horizon? Well, there are lots of things on the horizon. And if I was a battery engineer, I'd be incredibly excited about the future, because the technologies that they're looking at increase the battery energy density and power density by 100% or more relative to where we are today. But even with that increase, you still only get to the few hundred nautical miles range.
Wow.
So it just that puts into context the scale of the challenge.
So it's a lot of AAA batteries, basically.
Yeah. Yes. An awful lot.
Yeah.
So and you know, again, to put it into context, your kettle at home is probably the sort of most intense electrical appliance you've got. And that's typically about 3 kilowatts. So that's 3,000 watts.
Yeah.
A small aircraft, a commuter aircraft taking off, might need 800 kilowatts. Wow. So that's 800,000 watts. A single aisle aircraft on takeoff, so this is an Airbus A320, the one you might fly on your holiday on, needs about 20 megawatts. So that's 20 million watts.
Oh my.
So that gives you an idea of the relative scale of the challenge that you have to try and solve with the battery.
So I think something we haven't touched on much is the opportunities for a fuel cell. So fuel cell powered aircraft would have a very similar system to a battery powered electric aircraft. So the fuel cell would be connected to power electronics, which is connected to the electrical motor and power a propeller through that way. And that is something that FlyZero has been looking at for the regional aircraft.
Could you just say something about what a fuel cell is and how it would compare with a battery in mechanical electrical terms?
Yeah, so a fuel cell is a device that takes in hydrogen and through various means it converts that into electrical power. So the input is hydrogen and the output of the exhaust is water and oxygen, I think, actually. But that's why Bethany's saying it would be connected up to an electrical system. So relative to a battery, a fuel cell is a route to achieving that electrical power system, which is very efficient, but it's shortcutting the technology challenge of the battery because, relatively speaking, for the overall weight, the hydrogen fuel cell can, you know, is more power efficient because it's got the hydrogen in the fuel cell itself. So that's how you would use it in the context of an aircraft.
But that doesn't that just return us to the problem of volume of hydrogen and the amount you actually need and the design of the aircraft, weight problems and so on?
It does. And actually, that's a critical overall message that it's important to understand with all of these things. There is no simple single solution that solves all of the problems. All of the options have relative pros and cons, challenges and opportunities. What you then are forced to do is for the whichever application or type of aircraft you're looking at, the pros and cons will sort of weigh differently. So in some cases, you know, that's where the battery wins. And in other cases, that's where the hydrogen solution will win, or SAF or something else.
Yeah.
And so that's the key challenge that the engineers are all wrestling with when we're looking at these things, because it's not actually then just an engineering problem. It's a cost problem. It's a life cycle problem. It's a sustainability problem. It's all of these things. Trying to balance all of these requirements at the same time is a real challenge.
That's really interesting. I mean, I don't think a lot of people recognize that, because people like me, who, you know, lay people, tend to see the future in black and white. We're going to get one solution to everything. And what you're saying is that actually the future will be a series of solutions, and possibly in stages.
And it's said all the time in aerospace, there's no one silver bullet to combating the emissions of aerospace. And I think the way in which FlyZero has been structured, and what's really effective about that, is that, so we've got these concept aircraft, which they're the glamorous things that everyone's drawn to see,
yeah,
what do we think that we can fly in. But actually, what's really powerful about the work that we've done is we're putting out technology roadmaps, because for each of those concepts, they have different technologies involved in them. But really, a lot of the analysis and work that we've been doing is to look at the technologies for any application and what's possible. And that's, we need investment in each of the technologies to come up with that sort of combination of different viable solutions. And it's not just these three shiny concepts that we've spent a lot of time doing analysis in. The concepts have kind of been a mechanism to prove out technologies just for the sake of our analysis. Yeah. So we can say what we believe could be possible, but the combination of technologies in the future will open so many other opportunities.
What do you think will be first on the table for our listeners? What should they be looking for first out of this magic box?
I think from a general public perspective, the first thing they'll see is probably sustainable aviation fuel.
Yeah.
And actually, they'll find it very difficult to spot, because, as we've already discussed, the aircraft, you know, the engines, everything will look the same.
Yeah.
The fuel just being pumped into the tanks is different. That's the nearest term solution for large aircraft, because it is drop-in. Yeah. And, you know, it is possible to make biofuels today. The challenge with biofuels and SAF is actually scaling up the production to the volumes that aviation needs. Heathrow in 2019 used something like 20 million litres of kerosene every single day.
Wow.
Oh, my Lord.
So it's, you know, that's the challenge. It's getting to producing that much fuel. And again, that's why we need to look at all these options, because from my perspective, SAF is the nearest term solution, but it isn't a zero carbon solution. Hence, we need to look at other things that may come in further down the line.
I think my response to your, or my initial reaction to your question was, I hope is investment. I think that's what we need to see first, or straight away we need investment in these technologies, and we need to see that it's being taken seriously by government and industry. And I mean, COP26 last year in Glasgow was a good example to see where, I mean, EasyJet had flights going from London to Glasgow that used SAF. So we've seen SAF already. It wasn't 100% SAF, but at least it's something. But yeah, we absolutely just need commitments to the technology investment, and we need ground-based infrastructure in order to test out capability and technologies.
So who's doing the evangelical work on this? Who's actually selling it all?
It's a good question. I think there are two elements to that. The first thing that I was just going to add to the previous conversation actually is, from a public perception perspective, a lot of what we're talking about here, as Bethany says, requires investment, which has to come from somewhere. What that's likely to mean for most people is that the cost of flying will increase. If you look at the cost of flying at the moment, it's actually incredibly low in historical terms. And in order to fund the decarbonisation of aviation, the ticket price is likely to go up,
right,
either through taxation of kerosene or, you know, equivalent levies to help fund these green technologies and bring them to market. Personally, I don't think, you know, I think that's something that is needed. I think that's something that we should all recognise is a price worth paying if it means that we can continue to fly, but with lower environmental impact. So I think for me that's one of the key messages here is that's also likely to be an effect of all these different things going on.
When you look at the whole thing, what excites you two most about what's happening in zero emissions at the moment?
So I think for me, what excites me the most is, I mean, the fact that I got to spend a year working on a project that had the simple goal of making aviation in the UK zero emissions, or making aircraft zero emissions.
Yeah.
And it's just really powerful for me to feel like the project I'm on is a force for good and a force for combating climate change. And I'm really passionate about encouraging young people into STEM through the opportunity that sustainable STEM provides careers to really have a positive impact on the world. So that's what gets me excited at the moment. And I see it as a really big opportunity to attract diverse people into careers in engineering, because like, you see the people rallying on the streets, it's young people, it's young females, it's young females from ethnic minority backgrounds. And I think that, yeah, I follow activists on Instagram, and I'm constantly just trying to think about how I can get these passionate activist people engaged in careers in engineering where we can, yeah, make this technology possible. So that's what really excites me at the moment.
That's great. I think you should be the evangelist on this. I think you need to start practicing. Dave, what about you? What excites you most?
So I think for me, human beings are ultimately very social animals. And, you know, I think we've witnessed through the pandemic recently the impact on people's mental health from restricting the social interaction face to face that you can have.
Yeah.
And I think at the moment, you know, tolerance and understanding are messages that come out very commonly in sort of wellness presentations and thinking about how we could improve society. And the ability of aviation to bring the world together, to enable people to go and see and experience other cultures for themselves, is hugely positive. You know, I've been very lucky in my life that I've been to some, you know, very different places and to see very different cultures. And the understanding that you get from being there in person is not something you could get from a Skype call or a Zoom call.
Yeah.
So my real driver is I really am passionate about the benefit of aviation in terms of humanity. What I am desperate to do is find a way that we can continue to provide that benefit but in a sustainable way. And if we can do that, I think that's a win-win. You know, it's everybody wins.
Yeah.
And so that's really what I'm excited about. It's how can we find a way to keep those benefits of flying, but, you know, achieve that sustainable means of doing it.
And do you think we'll actually achieve that?
I think it depends on where you set the bar. I think we can make huge progress based on what we've identified in Fly Zero and we've seen in other research programs. Most things in life are achievable. It's a question of time and money. Do I think solutions can be found? Absolutely. When will they be found is a question I'm afraid I don't know the answer to.
No, I think you're right. How about you, Bethany?
Yeah, I think we have to. I think there's no question about it. It's got to be done. And yeah, as Dave says, it's about the money and the time and the hard work to actually, make it possible.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm sorry, we're running out of time, but I have to say, Bethany and Dave, it's been a real pleasure listening to you. And you've really opened our eyes to a lot of aspects of zero emissions and aircraft of the future. So thank you very much indeed for your presence here today. I hope you've enjoyed it.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm glad we finally got the recording done after many times.
Yes, yeah. The listeners won't know that, but we've actually had
four, I think, in the end of it.
Four postponements.
Yeah.
But we made it in the end. And I have to say, ATI have been absolutely marvellous in cooperating with us throughout all of that faff. So thanks very much indeed for
Thank
that
you.
As well.
Yes.
And we'll almost certainly be coming back to you in the future. But thanks very much for today, Bethany and Dave.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. We'll be right back.